This is a HeadGum Podcast.
This is why. This is why.
Pop culture, politics, friendship, dating, work, parenting news.
This is why.
The podcast.
Welcome to the This Is Why podcast. I'm journalist, author, and comedy writer Laura Lane.
And I'm author and editor Angela Sparrow. We are the co-writers of the book, This Is Why You're Single. Every week we give best friend advice on topics including pop culture, news, friendship, dating, workplace dynamics, parenting, and whatever else is on your mind.
This week's episode is called Eating Plant-Based. We'll be answering your listener questions, including one about plant-based protein options and another question from a listener worried about nutrient deficiencies. Then we're talking about what's in the news, how food affects sleep, and the happiest cities in America. But first, we want to welcome this week's guest. She's been one of my BFFs for over a decade since we were both at E! Entertainment working as lowly writers for the website. Whitney English Taibbe is a registered dietitian, nutritionist, and journalist. She's got over 10 years experience reporting in the health and wellness space. Her website, YouTube channel, and social media platforms, Whitney ERD, provides readers with evidence-based, easily digestible information on popular nutrition topics and healthy original web recipes. She's also the co-founder of the community and Instagram Plant-Based Juniors with fellow dietitian and mama Alexandra Caspero. And now they have a new book out. It's called The Plant-Based Baby and Toddler, and it hits stands May 18th. Welcome to the show, Whitney.
Thank you so much for having me, ladies.
I'm so excited. Hi. I feel like this has been like a long time coming. We were like, when are we going to have Whitney on the show? And when we were doing the rebrand, one of the first people, I was like, and then, you know, we'll rebrand. We could talk about other things besides dating. We could have like Whitney as a guest to do nutrition. And like, you were like one of the first people we were like excited to have on the show.
Well, yeah. I am stoked to be here. I remember when you guys first started the podcast, I think I came to, maybe it was at least in the first year, one of your recordings was Stassi.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Like way back in the day.
Good old Stassi. Good old Stassi. So, Whitney, we both got our start together covering celebrities. You and I have both moved on from that world, but in different ways. I don't even think you're like my best friend. I don't even remember if I've ever really asked you how you first got so interested in nutrition and realized you wanted to go back to school. Like, I remember you being like, I'm going back to school. I'm like, going to go get like my master's. And I don't remember having the discussion.
You're just
of
like,
how
okay, that,
that
makes sense.
Yeah. Like,
you're probably tired of spying on Paris Hilton.
Same. You know? Yeah. I was tired of, oh my God. It was like, one day it was like Katie Holmes. I had to spy on Katie Holmes. And then the next day it was like Kate plus eight, whatever her name was.
God.
And I'd have to drive to Pennsylvania. And I was like, I need to get out of this world.
Yeah.
ASAP.
Not the healthiest world.
Not exactly. There's only so many nights you can spend in bars trying to rub elbows with famous people before you get pretty exhausted.
Yeah. But I mean, like, we've both been always like interested in health and working out and like eating healthy. But how did you decide that you wanted to make this your career?
Yeah. So I mean, like you said, I've always been interested in fitness and nutrition. I played a bunch of sports growing up. My family was very sports oriented. My grandpa owned athletic clubs. My dad was a professional athlete at one point. So it's always been in my world. And when I moved out to Los Angeles, I was reporting on Hollywood and celebrities, and that just naturally led to reporting about their lifestyles and their diet and the fitness routines that they followed. And I was super interested both personally and professionally. But what I found along the way was there was just a lot of misinformation. I was constantly hearing one diet promoted and then another and conflicting information. And as a reporter, I'm like, there's got to be some truth here. Like, everybody's saying different things. None of this makes sense. A lot of it sounds a little bit dangerous. So I wanted to get to the bottom of it. And it was actually while working at E! That I met another registered dietitian. She had worked with celebrities. That's why I was interviewing her. And she told me what it meant to be a registered dietitian. And was like, yeah, you know, you can go back to school. It'll probably take you like 6 years, da-da-da-da-da. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, not going to be doing that. Fast forward, I was working at another company called She Knows, a women's online website, and I got laid off. And so I was kind of at this turning point in my career where I had to ask myself, am I going to continue on this path of doing work that I'm just really not that passionate about? Or am I going to take a leap of faith and go back to school, even though it's going to take a lot of time because my undergraduate degree was in journalism, meaning I had no science under my belt. And it was really my husband who pushed me to do it. He said, you know, if you want to do it, like the time's going to pass anyway, do it. And so I decided to go back to school. I took a bunch of prereqs at community colleges here in Los Angeles, and then luckily got into the USC program at for gerontology, health span. Saying this wrong. Apologize in advance. This mama of a 4-month-old is running on fumes right now. Got my degree in nutrition, health span, and longevity, and became a dietitian, and here I am today.
I loved when you were in school. We would like go out to eat, and you would just tell me all the new stuff that you learned. And you were one of the first people that kind of really opened my eyes to realize how about the labeling between like dietitian and nutritionists, and how there are so many like faux experts on Instagram or that, like, and I feel really guilty for all those years working at magazines where I would interview people that like did not actually have real credentials necessarily.
Yeah.
Cause they would like email us and be like, I'm an expert in food. But it was like, they weren't looking at evidence-based information. They were just like, yeah, like do the lemonade
this
diet.
This is what yeah. Gwyneth Paltrow eats.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It must be right.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, I'm completely guilty too. I would constantly interview fitness trainers and use them as the authority on nutrition when really, you know, it's a whole different ballgame when you've actually gone to school and learned the science of nutrition versus information that you can get just online or read via layman sources. So
yeah, I really did love doing those interviews with when I would talk to the real experts. Like I remember there was one person I interviewed, I wish I could remember her name, but she got Anne Hathaway into like Catwoman shape. Was it Batwoman or Catwoman? I think she was Catwoman. But it was funny because she was all, I think she was not really an expert because all of the shit she told me like has since been like disproven. I think she was all about like don't eat nightshades. You know, and then
Tom Brady into that.
Yeah, Tom
Brady
is
like,
not
is that still a thing? Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Anyway.
If you think a tomato is your problem, you've got bigger problems.
For real. I mean, but at least Tom Brady. Yeah. I don't think it's the fact that Tom Brady's avoiding tomatoes that makes him like, you know, so successful. I think it's the fact that like, yeah, he is plant-based and he's like really crazy about his body and nutrition. He's not eating a bunch of junk. But I don't think it's the like tomatoes that he's avoiding.
I mean, I definitely commend some parts of his diet. So yeah. I'm not going to slam him as a whole. I really do respect anyone who's trying their best to eat better for themselves or the planet, whatever it be.
For sure.
But yeah, there's so much crazy information out there. I remember once I had a trainer, and this is before I became a dietitian, and I started talking to her and I was like, yeah, I'm trying to like tone up a little, you know how you're always interested in toning up, so to speak, back in the day.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, well, it looks like you're a slow muscle building type. So I think you're going to need to be eating about 50 to 60 grams or 50 to 60% of your calories from protein.
And now you're like, that's too much.
I think even like lay people know that that is just outrageous. Yeah. The recommended amount is about 10 to 30% of your intake. So just wild, wild claims.
I'm curious. When I tell people that I'm mostly plant-based, they say, like, is that for health reasons? Is it for ethical reasons? And I'm like, I don't know, like, a little bit of both. Like, I really, like, my family's, like, a bunch of animal activists, and they're, like, very hardcore vegan. Like, they don't even eat honey.
Yeah, your sister is very,
very, very, yes.
Very
I mean,
strict.
And when you watch, very, she's very, very strict. She's very strict. Not as strict as you and I. And she posts, you know, pictures of like that are like totally horrific. It's like these baby chicks being like shot out of like, you know, shoots and like the pigs crying and like the cows crying for their babies. Like it is like horrific. It'll make you not eat cheese and milk if you watch her videos.
But she doesn't even eat fish, right?
No fish. No honey. She doesn't want to hurt the bees. So she's very, very, very hardcore. And I'm a little less strict. Like I personally don't eat yogurt, but I'll let Rilo eat yogurt. I don't eat milk. Mm-hmm. But if like there's a pastry that has some butter in it, like I'll eat that. I'm curious for you, Whitney, was it health reasons or ethical reasons or a mix of both that got you eating predominantly plant-based? Which I also love that phrase that you kind of coined. Like,
Thank you.
It's like not so strict. It's like, I'm predominantly plant-based. I will have a piece of salmon sometimes, you know?
Yeah. We're keeping it flexible. I coined the term predominantly plant-based after taking a nutrition course in Italy with a leading researcher in the field of fasting and longevity who heads up the Longevity Research Institute at USC. And it was in his class during my dietetic program that I learned about the benefits of a plant-based diet, the health benefits of a plant-based diet. And I'd really never heard this before. You know, I'd come from this fitness background where it was like, you need to eat 30 pounds of chicken breast a day to be healthy. It was shocking information to me, but the science was there. And I mean, within a couple of days, I was sold. Health has always been the primary driver for me and why I decided to start eating this way. And then along the way, the ethics, the animal cruelty issues, I started to learn more about those, and that came into play as well. So predominantly plant-based to me takes into account both the benefits of a plant-based diet for health, as well as the fact that going completely vegan just doesn't work for everyone. And in my dietetic program, I had also spent a lot of time working in the eating disorder world. And so I learned about a concept called intuitive eating, where you really listen to your body to drive eating choices. You listen to your hunger and fullness cues. And a lot of the research on eating disorders shows that being very restrictive actually backfires in the long run. So if people try to jump onto a very restrictive diet, they usually often go back to eating the way they were before at some point, and sometimes even worse. And so when I was confronted with the information that a plant-based diet is the healthiest way to eat, I was also kind of trying to reconcile it with the information that, hey, if I go all or nothing into this eating pattern, there's a good chance that it's not going to work for me and I'm just going to completely rebound. I also really love to travel. I love to experience new things. And animal products are a big part of other cultures, even some of the cultures around the world that are very plant-based and that have very long-lived populations, aka the blue zones. They eat small amounts of animal products. Even
the Mediterranean diet.
The Mediterranean diet, exactly. So there's five spots, and I feel like I'm going in a million different directions.
There's five spots in
the world called the blue zones where they have the largest populations of centenarians, and that's people living over 100. And there's common themes with these areas. I believe one of them is in Greece, one of them is in Italy, one's in Costa Rica.
Hey, you've been there. I've been there a few times. I'm obsessed with blue zones. Like one of my bucket list things is to go to all the blue zones. So Sardinia.
Are we going to do that together?
I would love to. So I've been to Ikaria a bunch, and it's a tiny little island in Greece. I'm very into blue zones. So I'm like, so on board.
Tell us what you ate there.
I love.
You're both going to live forever.
They do. They eat the feta cheese. Like, I mean, I just didn't order anything with meat, but they really do. They just like don't, they eat mostly plants, and
yeah,
it's just all healthy stuff grown from the earth. There's like nothing processed.
So the traditional diets in all of these places, Okinawa is another one,
mm-hmm. In Japan,
are like 80-90% plant-based with small amounts of animal products. So when you take all of this information into account, what you see really is that, at least if we're talking health-wise, the most important thing is just to eat mostly plants. You know, a small amount of animal products is likely not going to kill you. So that's kind of where my philosophy, predominantly plant-based, comes in. As plant-based as you can be, as often as you can be, in whatever way that works for your lifestyle. So for me, that means I eat eggs and cheese occasionally and fish occasionally. But I would say about 90 to 95% of my diet is strictly plants.
That's me too. Sometimes I'll put like a little butter on one of my pancakes, you know, like beet pancakes or pumpkin pancakes, and the pancakes have no eggs in them. And so it might, my diet like might not make sense to anybody because it doesn't fall. It's just, yeah, it is. It's like,
and
predominantly,
that's okay. That's the whole thing.
Plant-based. Yeah.
If it works for you and if it keeps you eating mostly plant-based, then awesome. Because, you know, we hear so many people out there on their soapboxes, and while I 100% commend anyone who can stick to a strict vegan diet, we need everyone on this planet eating less
just less
meat, eating less animal products, or we're not going to survive.
Yeah.
And so if we can promote a message of inclusivity, then that's really what's going to drive us towards the environmental, the animal rights goals that we have, is if everybody starts to care about this versus having these like black and white, completely separate groups of people with completely separate ideologies.
With shaming. Yeah. I mean, like, do I want to see a pig suffer? No, I don't. Like, I see, like, yeah, my friends that have like a place upstate with a little farm with a pig, and I'm like, I know what you're gonna do to that pig, and it makes me so sad. I don't eat any meat. I don't eat any chicken.
Yeah,
and yeah, I am. We have like the same exact diet, and they're
yeah.
It's like not about being vegan because there's so many unhealthy vegans. They're like Oreos are vegan. It's like, yeah, I don't eat Oreos. Like I just don't eat. I have sweets sometimes, but like you can be very I think. I like that it like was driven by health, and then the animal stuff comes in.
I definitely because and the times that I've been the strictest plant-based, that's more been driven by animal rights issues versus by health. Because I believe for health, you can eat some animal products. If we're strictly talking about animal rights issues, it's really messed up. What's going on?
Really, it's very dark.
There's a. If you want to learn more, watch this documentary called Dominion, and you'll probably be vegan for at least a few weeks after that. But it's not cool. I'm hoping we can come to a place eventually where we can have this work out for everybody. But I don't know.
I appreciate this approach though. Like because the sole person on this podcast who unfortunately probably eats more animal products but is trying to eat less, I appreciate the approach where it's like any little bit that you're doing is good.
Yes.
You know, it's not all or nothing. Because like I try, but I have cheese. I have meat occasionally, you know.
That's totally okay. You know, the fact that you're trying is what's important.
Yeah.
That's why I've always appreciated your like your little community that you created, Whitney, of like online, like getting recipes from you and like health tips from you, is I don't feel like a bad person.
No. It's not shamey. So yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Angela.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not shamey at all. And it's, and it is slow. Like, it's not like you wake up one day, you're like, I'm going to go vegan, because that feels like a hardcore diet. It's like, I think for me, it was like a slow process where I was like, I'm just going to like stop ordering sandwiches that have meat in them. And then I'd go to a wedding and maybe there'd be a pigs in a blanket and I would eat one. And then at some point I would eat one and it would just taste gross to me. And the thought of like eating meat felt like I was eating flesh. And I was like, I'm actually weirdly not craving this anymore. And then it was like a slow process for me. And so... anyways.
And that's most of the successful plant-based eaters I know, that is their trajectory as well. It was little by little. Because as you said, if you all of a sudden decide, I'm not going to eat this, and then you wrap it up in a big bow of shame and put this food on a pedestal, it's very easy to see how you would fall back into eating it. Because when it becomes associated with, I'm a good person if I don't eat this, I'm a bad person if I do, you're just going to reject that entire way of thinking if you can't stick to it, because you don't want to constantly be feeling shamed every time you eat this food. And that's actually what we – and it's interesting because, you know, we're going to talk about kids in nutrition later. That's the same perspective that we have when we're talking about sugar and sweets and the research on trying to restrict kids from sweets. If you turn it into this black and white all or nothing thing, kids feel a lot of shame when they do eat these treats, and they often end up eating in secret, developing eating disorders. It's a bag of worms. So flexibility is the best approach for most things in life, I would say.
Yeah, that is a struggle with kids, especially like with Rhett. It's like, I don't want to be like, if he's like, can I have ice cream? I don't want to be like, no, because ice cream's bad. But also like, no, you can't have ice cream every time you talk about it. I really am like trying to work that fine line of being like, I try to actually, my approach is to, I think from improv, Angela, is like, I try to do like a yes and. Like, he'll be like, can I buy ice cream? Ice cream? I very rarely as a mother say no unless it's something dangerous. So I say yes on the weekend. Yes. And yes. And we can do that on Saturday. Like,
I love that.
Yeah. So
Laura, you've just come up with your own nutrition approach, model. I mean, I feel like you need to coin that.
Yeah, I do.
The,
I mean, I do it
the
for
yes
everything.
And yes approach and to approach. Dessert.
It's the yes and for literally anything in parenting. He'll be like, it'll be like bedtime. And he'll be like, can we go play, you know, can I go watch the Cars movie? Yes.
On tomorrow.
Tomorrow night, we can watch the Cars movie. So it's like, everything's a yes. So then when I say no, like, he knows I mean it. Because it's like, nope, yeah, we're just not doing that.
I'm stealing that.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
It's really
tip.
Great. It just it makes parenting actually like a lot more of a positive experience for me, because I don't feel like I'm constantly saying no. I feel like I'm constantly saying yes. It's just yes. And not right this second though, but yes. And this
yes
is
with
when,
an asterisk.
Yes, and this is when that thing will happen. Can I have another fruit? Can I have my third fruit roll? Yes, tomorrow after school.
Yeah. I mean, my mom always tells this story, and I feel like this was her approach too, where like, yeah, she would do like the yes and thing, because we would be at birthday parties when I was a kid, and like the kids who always heard no about sweets, like every other kid would be playing and there'd be the one kid just sitting there staring at the cake, waiting for time to cut
so
the cake,
sad.
Not playing.
That was
it
me.
Was like their one chance to eat, really.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think the yes and approach is good.
Totally. Yeah, we talk about all about the different parenting styles in our book, and the parents that completely restrict, that's called authoritarian parenting. And love my mom to death, but she was an authoritarian. I used to call her the fruit and vegetable police. And when I would go over to my friend's house, whose parents just kind of let them have a free-for-all, you would find me like in the pantry, fist deep in like a box of Twinkies, just going to town. Oh. Because – we didn't have that kind of stuff in my house.
Yeah.
I wasn't usually allowed to eat it.
It was not
a pretty picture. Yeah.
Well, I think it's so cool that you had this journey from like, you did a total career pivot. You went back to school for a long time, which is overwhelming. And now you have this whole successful community and you have your book out. And you found your collaborator. You have Alexandra Casparo, who you wrote your book with. And you know, Laura and I have been working together for a long time, so we're big fans of having a creative partner to bounce ideas off of. How did you find the right partner to work with?
Yeah. So Alex and I, we actually met through the blogging world long before I was a dietitian. I think we met at a bloggers conference like probably about 10 years ago. And we just stayed in touch via social media. She lives in St. Louis and I'm here in Los Angeles. And she had been vegetarian for a long time. I didn't become predominantly plant-based until about 5 years ago. But we both got pregnant and had our kids around the same time. So we both have sons that are about 3 right now. And when I was pregnant with my son Caleb, and I think her son Vander had just been born, we started talking about issues of parenting and specifically plant-based parenting. And we were finding that there was just a major gap in the available nutrition or available information on plant-based nutrition for kids that was actually written by credible sources. And there definitely was no like one-stop shop book you could go to get all of the answers. And so we just started swapping details like, did you read this study? What are you going to do about this? And we realized that we were kind of building our own database of this information and we should really share it. So we started Plant-Based Junior's Instagram and it took off pretty quickly, again, because I think it was kind of like an empty hole in the space of plant-based nutrition.
Completely. As a mother that like wanted to feed their child plant-based, like it was really hard to find information and I was so grateful for you guys.
Thanks. Yeah. So like the main thing we were finding out there was lots of like moms that were raising their kids plant-based. And so there were accounts like that or recipe bloggers, but no one that was like an actual registered dietitian or a nutrition professional sharing this information. So it became really popular. We built from there. We started a website. We made a bunch of guides for different stages of feeding. And now we've got our book coming out in May.
The book is amazing, by the way. Like it is, it's like 5 books in one. It's like a cookbook, but it's like also a book just filled with information. It's also gorgeous and has like amazing pictures and like good lunchbox ideas. It's so many things in one book that I'm like so grateful is coming out now while Rilo's only 2 and I'm having another baby. It's coming out at like the perfect time. I just love this book.
I'm grateful to you because you actually helped me edit one of the chapters. So Barely. For that.
I felt more like I got like a sneak peek of just information. I was like, I don't know if these notes are good, but these are my notes. But well, I'm big on like, yeah. I'm big on
the feedback is great. Feedback, so yeah. I appreciate it.
I'm glad.
Yeah, this is really everything that Alex and I wish we had had right when we had babies. This is the book that we would have wanted to read. So we're really, really excited and proud of everything that's come to be.
It's so good. All right, we're going to talk more later on in the podcast on some more plant-based tips and talk more about the book. But for now, it's time to jump into the mailbox to answer some of the nutrition questions we got from our listeners. First, we're going to take a very quick sponsor break. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Squarespace. Squarespace empowers millions of dreamers, makers, and doers by providing them with the tools they need to bring their creative ideas to life. It's an all-in-one platform where you can build a website, claim a domain, you can sell stuff online if you want to do that, market a brand, you can see your analytics. I like calling ourselves a dreamer, Angela. I know it's like market a brand, but I feel weird calling us a brand, but I'm down to call us dreamers. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we were dreamers at first. We made a website that reflected where we wanted to be. We dreamed up who we wanted to be, put it on our website, and it became a reality.
Oh my God.
All thanks to Squarespace.
Like The Secret. We created a press page when we maybe had like one press thing, and then it's grown.
It's kind of like a vision board. In a way.
I guess some websites can be vision boards, but it's like they used to say like dress the part of the job you want.
Exactly.
And so now maybe since you're just probably wearing pajamas because you're working from home, instead of dress the part for the job you want, create the website for the brand or product you want.
I think that's very well put. So yeah, do it. Squarespace has everything you need to create a beautiful and modern website. You start with a design template and then use drag and drop tools to make it your own. With Squarespace, you have the ability to customize the look and feel, settings, products, and more with just a few clicks. And they have 24/7 award-winning customer support if you get a little confused.
And that's something that I do a lot, but they make it really, really easy for somebody that's not tech savvy, but, you know, is very picky and likes to change stuff and likes to be in control. So if you are at all like me, check out squarespace.com/thisiswhy for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code thisiswhy to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. All right, Angela, what do we have in the mailbox? I posted that Whitney was going to come on the show, and I asked our Instagram followers if they had any plant-based questions, and we got these two great questions for Whitney.
Yes, we did. So first up, we have Patrice. Patrice wants to know, what are good protein plant-based options?
All right. Protein, always the number one question when it comes to a plant-based diet. Hi, Patrice. Thanks for writing in. So the first thing I want to say is that all whole plant foods have protein. That might shock some people. But one fun fact that I always like to share is that even coffee has protein. Even a couple cups of coffee has a couple grams of protein. So if you are not caffeine sensitive, you could actually meet your needs by just chugging coffee all day long. I don't suggest it, though. But yeah, so every single whole plant food, and I say whole because if we're talking about a processed plant food like oil, that doesn't have any protein or carbohydrates. That's just fat. But every whole plant, every fruit, every vegetable, every nut, seed, grain, legume has protein. The best sources, however, are things like legumes. So that includes beans, that includes soy food products, that includes peas, nuts and seeds. And then another thing that I think some people find surprising is that whole grains. So people usually think of grains and they think, oh, carbs are bad. Well, that's a whole different thing that we're probably, let's not get into today. Carbs are awesome, but whole grains are not just carbs. They're also a really great source of protein. Like a slice of bread, for example, has about 5 grams of protein. A cup of oatmeal has about 11 grams of protein. And when you think about how many grams of protein the average woman needs in a day, which is about 46 grams, you see that one cup of oatmeal could get you a fourth of the way there. So it's really easy to meet your needs on a plant-based diet just by eating a variety of whole plant foods.
Great. Great. Yeah,
That makes it pretty easy for Patrice, honestly.
I know. And that's,
yeah,
that's
also your oyster.
Kind of what you had mentioned earlier is like, you don't really need as much as people tell you that you, or that you might like hear that you need, you know, you don't need to overdo it. Right.
It's a big, big myth. And actually there is research showing that too much protein can be detrimental to health. So, there are some studies that have shown that people who eat higher amounts of protein actually have higher rates of chronic diseases like cancer, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and potentially even a reduced lifespan. So I always recommend that people stick to what they need and no more. And that the average amount is about 46 grams for women and about 56 for men. And you can easily find out if you're meeting your protein needs by just tracking it for a day. I promise you, you will be so surprised. When I first went plant-based, I was like, okay, I'm afraid I'm not going to meet my protein needs, which I always hear from other people now. So I tracked my intake for the day, and I found that I had like 90 grams of protein without eating any protein powders, without eating any animal products, just from eating like whole plant foods. So eat in variety, try to stick to, you know, try to get enough legumes and grains in your diet, and you'll easily meet your needs.
I always think about, like, I try to eat the rainbow. Someone told me that the different colors of food are like keys to the different nutrients they have. So like when I make Rilo's lunch, I'm like, I want it to look like a rainbow. I don't know.
Yes. And that's just fun for kids too.
It is just fun. All right. What else do we have in the mailbox?
All right. We have Taylor now. And Taylor wrote to us asking, are there signs we should look for to indicate certain nutrient deficiencies other than a blood test?
Yeah, so a blood test is always going to obviously be your best option for most nutrients. Some nutrients you actually can't detect in the blood, like calcium, for example. Your first sign of a calcium deficiency is like osteoporosis or osteopenia, which is really unfortunate because that means you're pretty far gone.
Right. But
for most nutrients, the only one that we really see, I would say, in the developing world that you're going to see a lot of overt nutrient deficiencies for, things like B12 deficiency or iron deficiency. And typically those signs are, at least in the early stages, are fatigue, feeling really tired. But if anything is off about your health, you should definitely go see a doctor about it, because there's so many different symptoms, as small as they could seem, that could be related to nutrition. But on the flip side, they could also totally not be related to nutrition. So it's hard to kind of give a list of like, oh, hair falling out. Well, like that could be a nutrient deficiency. It could also be something else. So I would say the main one though is feeling tired, at least if we're talking about deficiencies that are common in the developed world. There are nutrient deficiencies that are less common or that are not common in the developed world, but they're common in underprivileged countries, but we don't see a lot of those.
That's what happened to me I just thought it was because I was pregnant. I was so tired. And then it turned out I had anemia. I was iron deficient, which was not really related to my diet per se, but it just happens a lot to pregnant women.
Totally.
And so I had to
iron needs are just sky high during pregnancy.
Yeah. So I had to up my iron. And then because of that, they were like, you should take some magnesium so you don't get constipated. And now I'm all about magnesium. I'm like, it helps with sleep. It can help with stress. There's two different types of magnesium from what I understand. So I take, I take the moon juice magnesium powder at night, right before I go to sleep. Anyways, I feel less stressed. I sleep really good. And then I'm not constipated. So, but yeah.
Yeah, magnesium is one where you wouldn't probably see any overt signs, but you could be not taking in enough.
Yeah.
So that's why it's just really important, I think, to eat a really balanced diet and to supplement those things that you know you're not getting enough of. And one more note on iron is just, it's the most common nutrient deficiency in both kids and adults, and that's regardless of diet. So both omnivores and plant-based eaters that are adults have the same rates of iron deficiency.
Actually, Whitney, I'm curious, speaking of iron, so my dad is also anemic, and his doctor told him to eat a bunch of steak. I wonder how you feel about that. And do you have any tips?
Oh, I have no thoughts on that.
I would like to gear him away from that, but find something that will
Have him take like an reinforced iron pill. Why not just like an iron pill? Why would the doctor... number? Yeah, tell him that.
I mean,
is that right? Brilliant advice, Laura. The number one thing, the most reliable, safe, efficacious thing to do if you are iron deficient is to take a supplement, because you need to correct that problem as quickly as possible. And obviously your diet wasn't doing it. Once you've restored your iron levels, then you can start focusing on trying to meet your iron needs through food. And you don't have to do, you don't have to eat steak to do it. Again, this applies to babies as well. We often hear that beef is like the best first food because it's iron rich. I actually just did a graphic, an infographic over on Plant-Based Juniors yesterday, comparing sources of iron. And many of the legumes, so we're talking about white beans, black beans, lentils,
chickpeas.
Actually have chickpeas. Like, I don't know. I didn't look up chickpeas. I'm sure it's close, but they all have the same amount or more iron than steak. And people are shocked to hear that. They're like, well, maybe it's by weight. No, it's like the same or more. Lentils have more. I was just going to say the issue is, and this is a criticism you'll hear as well, is that the iron called non-heme iron that's found in plants isn't as readily absorbed as heme iron, which is iron that's only found in animal products. And that's true. But you could easily overcome that issue by pairing plant-based iron-rich foods with a source of vitamin C.
I was going to say with citrus.
Yes, yeah. Citrus, strawberries, bell peppers, potatoes. Did you know potatoes have vitamin C? And that increases the absorption of the plant-based iron by 3 to 6 times, which brings it up to the same level of absorption as the iron found in meat.
Is your mind blown?
My mind is blown.
I don't know. Whitney has like a whole blog post about like which supplements you should take and how to know if it's like a good supplement. My favorite brand for your dad is Thorn. That's what like every one of my doctors recommends, Thorn. And then I just take my little iron pill with like a chug of orange juice, and I drink it with orange juice to like absorb it. But like, yeah, also, does your dad like oysters? I'm like,
probably.
Oysters have a shit ton of iron, right, Whitney? I don't want to be giving the nutrition advice when I have an expert on here, but like,
I believe so.
Oysters,
you know what?
Really high up on my, like, my doctor gave me this like whole thing. I had to go talk to like a hematologist. Like, it was a whole thing. So I have all these printouts, but yeah, I eat like a ton of cooked oysters because I can't eat them raw when I'm pregnant. I eat a ton of cooked oysters. I chug my iron pill with some orange juice, and then I put like a crap ton of spinach in my smoothies. Am I doing good, Whitney? Is there anything else I should be doing?
You're doing really well. I don't want to put you down. I don't want to be negative, but I will tell a fun little anecdote from our book about spinach. Uh-oh. So we have a tiny little section called Popeye was wrong, because everybody thought, you know, Popeye was strong and because he's getting all this iron from spinach. Well, it turns out, and I will tell you that almost every single nutrition expert I know doesn't actually know this, because I constantly hear the information regurgitated that iron is a good source, or spinach is a good source of iron. I did some digging. This is what you can always expect from me. And I found that iron actually isn't readily absorbed from spinach. And it's not just because of that reduced bioavailability issue that happens with all non-heme iron. It's because it's a combination of the fact that spinach is really rich in calcium and polyphenols, which are phytochemicals found in plants, and these absorption inhibitors. So it's this like array of compounds that actually prevent the iron in spinach from being uptaken very well, even when you pair it with the source of vitamin C. Now, there isn't a ton of research on this. It was just a few small studies, but I would be wary of using spinach as your main source, but it sounds like you've got a million other sources.
No, but I was like, really, like, I'm just going to down some iron, or I'm going to down some spinach in my smoothies. I was putting, like, instead of using coconut water, I was using orange juice, because I was like, it'll help it absorb. But yeah, I another thing to tell your dad, I do like what Winnie said is the calcium inhibits the iron, is I make sure I take my calcium pill separate from my iron by like a couple hours.
Yes, that's very important.
But that's good to know. Good to know. Don't just count on that spinach.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that the spinach and the calcium in the spinach would inhibit the absorption from other foods around it. I just wouldn't count on the iron that you think you're getting from the spinach itself.
Wow.
Legumes and grains are probably your richest plant-based sources of iron.
I could, like, geek out over this stuff all the time. Wow. Or forever.
And that's why I love you, Laura, because most of my friends, their eyes start to glaze over and they're like, yeah, I'm not gonna have dinner with you again.
No.
See, for me, you're really boring.
I actually feel the opposite, where I feel like, am I taking advantage of the fact that my best friend's a nutritionist and I, like, text her stuff? Like, should I be, like, paying for, like, a consultation at this point?
Because I'm taking advantage of the fact that you'll listen to me.
Okay, good. All right, good. This is a win-win relationship.
Yes, it is.
If any of you listeners want your questions answered, email us at contact@thisiswhythepodcast.com. Slide into our DMs on Insta @thisiswhythepod. You can also find all of our contact info on our website, thisiswhythepodcast.com. Next, we're going to talk about what we've been reading in the news. But first, let's thank our sponsors.
We would like to thank our sponsor, Stitch Fix. Stitch Fix offers clothing hand-selected by expert stylists for your unique style, size, and budget. So now that we are reemerging from our very odd year of being home and wearing sweatpants and leggings all the time, maybe a nice shirt on top, but the bottom was always comfy, we're going out now and I'm realizing I have cute clothes, but they're all old and I need to, like, totally revamp my wardrobe because I haven't bought anything in the last year because I've had nowhere to go. And now I want to be seen. I want to look cute. I want to be trendy. But it's like, it's daunting. Like, I don't want to do all the work myself. I'm a millennial. I want someone else to do it for me. So that is why I love Stitch Fix, because it's a completely different and fun way to find clothes that you will love to wear. Here's how it works. Every piece is chosen for your fit and your life, and it's the easy solution to finding what makes you look and feel your best. You try on pieces at home before you buy, keep your favorites, and send back the rest. Stitch Fix has free shipping, easy returns and exchanges, and a prepaid return envelope is included. So get started today at stitchfix.com/thisiswhy, and you'll get 25% off when you keep everything in your fix. That's stitchfix.com/thisiswhy for 25% off when you keep everything in your fix. Stitchfix.com/thisiswhy. We would like to thank our sponsor, Finding You. Finding You is an inspirational romantic drama full of heart and humor about finding the strength to be your true self. I have said this before. I am now fully vaccinated, and the first thing that I want to do is not travel, not see loved ones. I want to go to the movies. I want to get popcorn. The movie theater by me actually serves alcohol, so I want a big glass of wine, some popcorn, and I want to watch something that is light, possibly romantic, and just fun. And I think that that's what Finding You is. So a little bit about Finding You. After an ill-fated audition at a prestigious New York music conservatory, violinist Finley Sinclair travels to an Irish coastal village to begin her semester studying abroad. At the B&B run by her host family, she encounters a gregarious and persistent heartthrob movie star who is there to film another installment of his medieval fantasy adventure franchise. As romance sparks between the unlikely pair, Beckett ignites a journey of discovery for Finley that transforms her heart, her music, and her outlook on life. Finding You is the perfect film if you're looking for something to watch that's fun, lighthearted, and funny. That is exactly what I'm looking for. I cannot wait to see it. So be like me, make plans now, bring a friend, bring a family member, bring your significant other, and see Finding You, now playing only in theaters. For more information or to find tickets to a theater near you, visit findingyouthemovie.com.
All right, Angela, what have you been reading this week?
So the New York Times had an article on how foods may affect our sleep. So obviously I clicked on it immediately because, Whitney, we talk about this a lot. My fiance Ian has had insomnia for about 7 years. Mm. He averages about 4 hours a night if he's lucky. So I was like, maybe I'll learn something. So they said a growing body of research suggests that foods you eat can affect how well you sleep, and your sleep patterns can affect your dietary choices. Researchers have found that eating a diet that is high in sugar, saturated fat, and processed carbohydrates can disrupt your sleep, while eating more plants, fiber, and foods rich in unsaturated fat like nuts, olive oil, fish, and avocados seem to have the opposite effect, helping to promote sound sleep. This wasn't super surprising to me. I feel like I knew this. But good to have it reinforced. Something that they don't get into in the article is like timing of when you eat and like how that affects sleep. Because I know like for Ian, he eats a bunch of nuts. Like that's his late night snack. But I hear him in the kitchen at like 2 o'clock in the morning rustling around eating nuts. And I'm like, I don't know if this is good. do you have any like tips as like food and sleep relate to each other?
Sure. Well, first of all, like you just spelled out from the article, it's a vicious cycle. Poor sleep leads to poor food choices, which leads to poorer sleep. And it just kind of goes around in circles. And it's hard to break out of that. But yeah, the timing of food intake is something that we're learning more about. The best practices from people who are experts in sleep would really say to stop eating about 2 to 3 hours before bed. And that's really because our insulin levels and our melatonin levels are kind of in contrast. So insulin rises in order to help your body uptake glucose into your muscles after you eat food, whether that be carbohydrates or protein. Both can raise your insulin levels. And when insulin is high, it makes you produce less melatonin. And melatonin is the sleep hormone, the hormone that our body starts producing as it gets darker outside, and that prepares our body for sleep. So really, in order to not kind of inhibit melatonin production, we want to stop eating before bed. But that's difficult, especially probably now, you know, when we're at home all day and we're bored and like you're watching Netflix and when you're getting ready for bed, sitting on the couch, drinking wine, eating chocolate.
I don't know about you, Winnie, but like for me, like having a kid has actually really, like I used to eat dinner at like 9:30 at night because that's what you do in New York City. I'd go out to eat. Mm-hmm. We'd like get home from work. We'd do stuff and then we'd like make dinner, order in, and I'd eat at 9:30 at night. But now I try to do the family dinners and my kid is hopefully asleep by like 8:30. And so he eats at like 6:30. So I've been eating a lot earlier. And yeah. I've just noticed, like, I feel better. I mean, there's been so many things that have, like, just made me feel better. Eating plant-based, I don't have, like, acne or cystic acne anymore. I, like, have more energy. But then, like, the eating early, I really did kind of notice a difference. But, yeah, this article was fascinating that you picked, Angela, because it's kind of like what Whitney said about, like, the cyclicalness of it. Like, if you get bad – if you're not sleeping great, you're going to wake up and be like, I'm kind of in the mood for like pizza or like a donut. Like you, right. The fact that you're craving those types of food and then those foods will make you sleep even worse. It's kind of like when I do like a nice workout, if there was a time I was going to have quote unquote bad food, maybe after workout is like kind of when I would do it. My body would, you know, like I've worked off a bunch of calories, but I actually crave healthier food after I work out. And then if I'm having kind of like a lazy week, I'm like, just want it. Like it is interesting, like the healthier you are, it like puts you in like a healthy spiral. It's very
good
fascinating.
Habits beget good habits.
Yeah.
And like you've probably heard that as a parent with trying to get your kid to sleep more. Sleep begets sleep. It's the same with other lifestyle habits. The more you do them, the more other lifestyle, positive lifestyle habits start to permeate your life.
Yep.
Yeah. Because you don't want to feel like you're setting yourself back.
Yep. But exactly.
Like if I do a bunch of sit-ups, I'm not going to be like, let me have a Sunday now.
You want to know what I've been reading, Angela?
Yes.
So we love good old Wallet Hub. They send us their studies that are very fun to read. And they sent us a new one about the they wanted to determine where people in America are most content in their lives. And so they compared more than 180 of the largest U.S. cities across 31 key indicators of happiness. I like using the word content more than happy. I like have this like belief that like it's like happiness is like a peak. When you get like exciting news, you feel happy. But like striving for just like a content life is like a better goal. Like I want content children. I think it's healthy for them to like struggle so that later in life they're not like shocked by struggle or setbacks. But anyways, I'm all about like contentness. But they look to where people have felt most content, and the data set ranges from depression rates to income growth rates to average leisure time spent per day. So I'm curious if you guys want to guess, what do you think is the happiest city in America? Any guess?
Somewhere with a lot of fresh air, I would imagine.
I mean, I've honestly don't know.
Somewhere in California?
It is in California. And I've actually never even heard of, have you heard, where the hell is Fremont, Winnie? Mm. Where,
it's up north.
Where I mean, is Fremont?
I'm not a California native, so please don't. I apologize if I can't remember exactly where everything is.
You knew the direction.
It's north of me.
Is it? But no, that's more than I know. I don't know where it is, and I grew up in California. I am a California native. Never heard of Fremont. Fremont, according to these peeps at Wallet Hub, and their study is the happiest place. I'll just go through the list. Top 10, Bismarck, North Dakota, number 2. Then you got
That's
Fargo.
Surprising, I feel like.
Yeah, a lot
Those
of
are really cold places. Oh. I would have expected it would be like sunny places where you can be outside, moving your body.
I would think so too. I'm very confused by some of these. Okay, so like
maybe life is just simpler there.
Irvine, California, by the way, and that's like basically where I live, is number 12. I'm like, people were not that happy there. Like, I don't know what. Like, if you grew up in Irvine, like, at least me, I wanted to get the fuck out of there. Okay, so Madison, Wisconsin's number 4. San Jose, California, number 5. South Burlington, Vermont, number 6. Lincoln. What is N-E? Wait.
Nebraska.
Nebraska. Thank you.
I know that because my college boyfriend was from there.
Oh, there you go. Okay, that's number 7. Columbia. MD is what? What's MD?
Maryland.
Yeah. Thank you. They need to spell out the states.
We need. Are we gonna go to have a geography lesson after this?
I mean, who? I don't. I'm sorry, but like the part of my brain that needed to remember the like acronym or the shorthand for states is like my brain was like, this is not important information. If you're writing a letter to somebody, they will tell you what it is.
It's always a Google away.
Cedar Rapids, number 9, and Santa Rosa, California, number 10. So I'll tell you some fun facts. San Francisco, Oakland, and Fremont, California have the lowest depression rates,
That's for San Francisco, I'd say that's pretty surprising.
Because they seem, think it'd be like stressful there in the Silicon Valley. Right. Yeah. No, they're doing good, I guess. It's 2.9 times lower than Billings, Montana, which has the highest depression rate at 32%. New Jersey has the lowest number of suicides per 100,000 residents. Fremont, California has the lowest separation and divorce rates, which is 4.4 times lower than in Cleveland, the city with the highest divorce rates, 40%. And that's where Nick's from. So thank God he left Cleveland because I don't know. We were just talking about sleep. So South Burlington, Vermont has the lowest share of adults sleeping less than 7 hours per night. So maybe you and Ian, I was thinking, could go take a little road trip to South Burlington, Vermont, see if that helps his insomnia.
Okay. I mean, Vermont has cozy vibes. I could see that. Lots of like wool sweaters and a hot cup of cocoa.
Yeah. Seattle, Washington had the highest sports participation rate, which is, I guess, like a indicator, you know, if you're happy, you're out playing sports. Yeah, so I don't know. Do any of the I was kind of surprised, like Whitney was. I thought it'd be like, oh, hi, or like Santa Barbara is the happiest. Uh-huh. You know, like
why I was like California, somewhere sunny by the beach.
Picture like an idyllic beach. Yeah, exactly.
I found Fremont. It is up near Palo Alto.
Yeah, you were right.
Someone actually mentioned it to me recently, so I was like, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, I didn't know where that was, but it's north. I guess they're happy up north. So
yeah.
They're the number one happiest city, apparently. You should go visit.
I got to go there. Yeah.
all right, guys. It's time for us to move on to our topic of the week.
This week's topic is eating plant-based. And I think it's a big worry that people have, making sure they go plant-based. They'll get all the nutrition. We kind of touched on the protein thing earlier. Your book includes visual guides, which we love. What should people know about incorporating nutrition into their diet if they're newly plant-based?
Sure. I would say, number one, or if you're thinking about going plant-based, is it's not as difficult as people might think. Really, to eat any diet, if you're trying to eat healthier, it's going to take a little bit of work. And that's whether you're eating plant-based or paleo. Like it's not something that you can just kind of do on a whim. You have to think about it. You have to learn a little bit about about the nutritional guidelines, and you have to do a little bit of preparation when it comes to grocery shopping or at least some minimal meal prep and cooking at home. But it's not any scarier than taking anything else on, I think I want to clarify, because I feel like a lot of the time people are like, oh, it seems difficult. There's a lot you have to know. Like, it's not that difficult. Like, you can probably learn it all in about 30 minutes and then you're good to go.
I love your Instagram stories. You do like a lot of like, this is what I got on my shopping trip. And you like take out all of your groceries. And I've learned about so many new brands from you. Like even little things like Sieta chickpea flour tortillas. And like, and now I'm like, oh, I should just buy those instead of like white flour tortillas if I'm making a quesadilla. Like I love your Instagram story shopping.
Thank
trips.
You.
Yeah.
But yeah, I try to make it simple, especially over at Plant Based Juniors. You talked about our visual guides. We have something called the PB3 plate, and that is a plate model. It actually looks like a plate, similar to ones you've probably seen from the USDA or Stanford, except for ours is specifically for plant-based nutrition. And it breaks the plate down into three major categories. And these categories, if you're filling each of them on your plate, will ensure that you're meeting all of your nutrient needs. And so that's fruits and vegetables, grains and starches, and legumes, nuts, and seeds. And then we've got little areas on the plate that kind of talk about the different micronutrients, which are vitamins and minerals that you'll find in each of these main categories. And then a little circle in the middle for fat, just a reminder that you always want to incorporate fat into all of your meals as well. And it's our way of kind of taking the guesswork out of nutrition. Like, you don't have to make some fancy meal, especially if we're talking about kids. Really just filling in the spot. You know, you put some rice or some whole wheat bread or whatever you want in that grain category. You drop some baked tofu in that legumes category, and you put any fruit or vegetable that they like on the plate. Boom, there you go. You've got a balanced meal right there. It doesn't have to be a big production. And another thing I'll say is that the more you eat this way, the more second nature it becomes, just like anything else in life.
And avocado is good for fats, right?
Yes, avocado is awesome for fat. So avocado is a fruit and it's got fat. So you knock out a couple categories right there. And we have the PB3 plate. If you go to our website or even just the link in our Instagram bio, you can download that for free. And I have it hanging on my refrigerator. So, you know, even on those days that I have nothing planned for myself or Caleb's lunch, I'll kind of look at that and I'll be like, all right, he's already got some strawberries on his plate and he's got a slice of whole wheat bread. So what else do I need to add to make this a complete meal? Well, I'm missing the third category, which is legumes, nuts, and seeds. So I will spread some hummus on his bread. Boom.
Boom.
And that's something that works for adults and kids, right? With like meal
planning?
Totally.
Yeah. So our PB3 plate was really structured for children in that we did something a little different than other plate models. We made the categories into thirds. And that's because, and other plate models often will have the fruits and vegetables category taking up half the plate. We did it a little less for kids because fruits and vegetables are very low in calories. And except for avocado, they're also very low in fat. And if kids, while we want kids eating those as much as possible, if they fill up too much on that category, then they might not get as many calories and fat as they need to fuel their bodies and their brains. Kids need a lot more fat.
That was the fat. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was worried about the fat. And I was like, he eats, like, I do feed him yogurt. So I was like, he eats this, like, full-fat yogurt and, like, a lot of avocado. He's like, great, great, great. That's great.
I think that's a big concern with plant-based diets for kids is really children need, depending on their age, about 30 to 40% of their calories coming from fat. So in like the first 2 years, they need 40% of their calories coming from fat, whereas adults can drop down as low as 10% of calories from fat. The recommended amount is about 20 to 30. But that's all just to say that kids need a lot of fat to fuel their brain. And plant foods are just naturally lower in fat than animal foods. So if you are providing your child with the lowest sources of fat, too much of them, fruits and vegetables that are also really rich in fiber, which fills up your stomach quickly, they're going to fill up before they get enough fat. So that's why in the PB3 plate, we put fat at the center. And that's just a reminder to always put fat in a meal, whether that be adding some avocado, whether that be cooking your vegetables in some olive oil, whether that be sprinkling some hemp seeds or some chia seeds on your oatmeal. It's really easy to do. You just have to be conscious of it.
Wait, that was one of my questions was going to be, so like, I didn't know if I like this was like a good idea or that helpful, but like if Rilo has applesauce, I just like mix in chia seeds or hemp seeds. I call them like little sprinkles that I'm putting in there. Like,
I love that.
Do you, and I literally just try to sprinkle like hemp seeds and chia seeds on like any type of food I can for him. Is that,
yes.
Is that good?
Yeah.
Like, in my head,
right? I think you
in
should
my head
just,
it
just
is.
Fairy dust everything, yeah. You know,
I don't
seeds, sprinkle seeds on everything. Okay. I do it too.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, I have
it's
no,
a really great.
I don't know if this is like, you know, I feel like it should be good, but I don't know it. So I'm glad to get the like dietitian approval that that's
definitely
helpful.
Good. Seeds can be, I will caveat that seeds can be expensive. So it's not always the easiest approach for everyone, but like nuts, any type of nut is an awesome source of fat. And even for our babies, they can easily have nuts as well. If you're offering like a nut butter, a thin smear on a slice of bread, or even just stirring it into some oatmeal or purees, there's so many different ways to easily get fat into your baby's diet. But I'm huge fan of seeds. We have seeds every morning in our breakfast, whether it be in our oatmeal or in my waffle recipe or in my pancake recipe. I'm a seed fanatic.
Yeah, me too.
I feel like I'm learning a lot today. Laura knew all this because she's on it.
Well,
because
Whitney's my best friend, so I get to bug her.
Did you, Whitney, learn anything new when you were researching for your book? Or were you surprised by something that you learned?
A lot of it I had already gathered, because this book has been like 3 years in the making, right? That I've kind of learned as being a parent, going through the motions. Something interesting I did learn, though, is that I wrote a section. So we have a whole section dedicated to each age group. And one of the age groups is about 1 to 2, when kids would start drinking cow's milk. So I dove deep into cow's milk. Like, how did we even begin to be drinking cow's milk in the
Which
first
is
place?
Fucking
and how did
creepy.
It, and how did it become like the main beverage for children? Like, why did the USDA start recommending 3 cups a day? Well, it was not easy to find. I didn't even actually get a solid answer to that specific question. But one thing that I learned that was really interesting, it's just kind of a crazy fact, is that back in the 1800s, they actually used to use goats as wet nurses sometimes. Isn't that strange and kind of gross?
It's so upsetting. Like, if I try to get, like, I was like, Nick, just try my breast milk. Just try it. And he was like, no, that is disgusting. I'm like, so you'll drink titty milk from another animal, but not your own wife.
But not titty my milk? Titty?
Not my titty milk. And if you, like, actually think about it, like, it is so gross. Like, the thought of maybe eating somebody's breast milk might gross you out. But, like, you have no problem eating breast milk from, like, literally, like
it's weird.
Not even a human, like an animal, and it's normal. Like, that's why, like, the thought of cow's milk and like meat,
yeah,
eating flesh, it just grosses me out now, to the point I still will have like a slice of pizza every now and then. But like, yeah, I do find the whole like giving children cow's milk just so insane. And I,
it's
and you
interesting.
And I, we like Ripple, right? Ripple, the like pea protein milk.
Yeah.
One of the ones,
so I kind of, yeah, I go back and forth. I offer both fortified unsweetened soy milk, any brand. But you got make sure to read the label, because there are some brands of soy milk that don't fortify. And really, one of the biggest benefits of providing an alternative milk is really to get that calcium in. So if you're providing an unfortified milk, you're kind of really missing the point. We also want to get protein and fat from these milks. And with toddlers being picky eaters, that's one reason why we really advocate for giving at least 2 cups of milk a day. But calcium is what you want. So make sure it's fortified. But I do that, and I do Ripple, which is a pea protein based alternative milk as well.
This podcast has been so helpful and so informative. Is there anything else lastly that you want to add, or questions you get from parents, or anything that we didn't ask that you think would be good to add before we wrap up?
There's, I guess, just to say again that just like in all fields of nutrition, the world of plant-based pediatric nutrition is full of so many myths. I don't think we have time to jump to go into any of them in depth, but like things like whether or not soy is safe. Obviously, I think it is, since I just mentioned it. How to meet protein needs, what kind of milk you should have. And over on our Instagram channel and our website, we literally have like free handouts on every single one of these myths that you can download. So we've got like a milk myth handout. We've got an is soy safe. We've got a how to pick the best alternative milk. So if you have any questions, head over there. We've got answers.
I like that you're promoting all your free shit when you've got this amazing book that is out. No, no, no. I'm just kidding. That's what's so great is like, I love like, yeah, they have all the, there's like a bunch of like free information out there. Kind of like our podcast. Our podcast is free for people. We'll give free advice, but we would like you to also buy our book. So thank you, Whitney. Please check out her book, buy the book. It's really just wonderful. Like maybe you're a parent and you're interested in going plant-based for your child, but honestly, it's just a good book for adults too. It's called The Plant-Based Baby and Toddler. It hits stands May 18th, which is yesterday. So it's out now. It is out now. It is out.
You're in luck.
Now, check out Whitney's website, Whitney ERD, like Whitney E for English and then RD registered dietitian. So Whitney ERD and plantbasedjuniors.com. You can also check out those Instagram handles. Make sure you buy the book. Any other plugs I should tell people about?
Just that, yeah, if it is the week of the book release, we've got some awesome bonuses going on right now. We've got a bunch of discount codes that you'll get with our pre-sale PDF that actually end up making the book pay for itself. So good time to buy it if you intend to.
Yes, buy it. Plug for ourselves. Check out our book, This Is Why You're Single, my new book, Cinderella in the Glass Ceiling and Other Feminist Fairy Tales. They're available wherever you can buy books. We always encourage you to get them from your local indie bookstores.
Yeah, and you get hooked up with discounts from all of our sponsors. For a full list of sponsors and the codes, check out our podcast page on thisiswhythepodcast.com. And we are also on social, so you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at thisiswhythepod. Please like and subscribe on iTunes. And thank you for listening. Tune in next week for a whole new show.
Bye.
Bye.
This is why. This is why. Pop culture, politics, friendship, dating, work, parenting news. This is why the podcast.
That was a HeadGum podcast.